This episode of Film Frenzy contains spoilers for Nomadland. Consider this your spoiler warning.
Hi, I'm Brooke.
And I'm Tom, and this is another episode of Film Frenzy Friday. Let's do it. Okay, so this week we kind of went out on a limb and we decided to watch a movie that won Best Picture in the Oscars. That movie was Nomadland. So Brooke, tell us a little bit about Nomadland.
So Nomadland is a movie from 2020. It basically follows the story of a woman named Fern. She is a modern day nomad. It's directed by Chloe Zhao with a runtime of an hour and 50 minutes. It kind of falls into like a drama western type genre, you know, and then the cast, the only person in this cast who's actually an actor is Frances McDormand. And then they did something kind of interesting with the other actors. Everyone kind of plays themselves.
Yeah, it's basically a bunch of actual nomads that they must have hired to be in these movies. But actually, David Strathern is actually a known actor, but his name is Dave, so that kind of throws it off.
Yeah, I was going to say, because his name is Dave.
Yeah, he's been in other movies. But these other actors, Charlene Swanky, she plays Swanky in the movie. And you got Bob Wells, who plays Bob. Peter Spears, who plays Peter. So either they used a lot of actual names, or these are actual playing themselves roles.
Right. And, you know, it's actually interesting that we watched this movie, because I did an assignment earlier this week on another movie, which is called Winter's Bone. It's got Jennifer Lawrence in it. It's an indie movie. But that movie is a crime drama. The assignment basically that I had to do was about how they use like different techniques to make rural crime dramas like feel more realistic. And one of the techniques that they use is using semi-professional actors. Well, at the time when this movie came out, Jennifer Lawrence wasn't big yet, so that was like the whole thing. But they do that in order to feel more natural. They want you to feel like you don't know these people, if that makes sense. So it's almost like, I don't know these people and they're like real now. Like, I don't recognize them from other things. Like, I'm not looking at Angelina Jolie, you know, and in the back of my head, I don't know, oh, this is Angelina Jolie in a movie. And I think it makes it feel more natural. It like feels like real life. You know what I mean?
I can kind of relate to that, because when you watch a movie, you pick out the actors that you know, and you picture them in other movies.
Exactly.
So in a movie that you're talking about, that's what you know them from, because you don't know them from anything else.
Right. It's like kind of what they did with Blair Witch Project when that movie came out.
Okay.
Because you know how they kind of tried to make it so that Blair Witch was real, and then they used all these like people that you had never seen before. So you're like, oh yeah, this is real. I don't know who these people are. And they've never been in anything else ever. Like, they're just the Blair Witch people. It's the same thing as that.
Right. And another way I kind of get lost sometimes when I watch a movie, recognizing somebody and not realizing who they are, but it starts going through my head is, what do I know them from? What do I know them from? And it takes away from the actual movie.
Yeah.
So I know it's kind of a blessing and a curse at the same time, where
right.
I'm very knowledgeable when it comes to faces and actors and actresses that I know, but sometimes I get kind of lost in my own head trying to figure out what they're from.
Yeah, exactly. I guess that's what it kind of tries to avoid, for if I was understanding the reading correctly.
Well, I mean, it sounds legit. I mean, that sounds the way it should be. So right off the bat, I'm going to say that this really isn't the type of movie that we would normally do for a discussion, only because it won Best Picture because of the way it was filmed and the actors and actresses they used. And I'm not saying it was a bad movie,
right.
But it just wasn't enough to kind of get me excited about.
Right.
Good story. You could really relate to all the characters, the way that they filmed it. It was still a really good movie, right. Just maybe not for a Film Frenzy episode.
Yeah, I'm going to be honest. I was kind of banking on either the father, Anthony Hopkins actually won Best Leading Actor. I was banking on either that winning or Promising Young Woman winning. So I thought that we were going to have more to talk about, but it's okay. So
yeah, we're going to stick it out. We're going to do what we said we were going to do. And we're just going to review this movie.
Right. Frances McDormand, she did a good job. She won, you know, Best Leading Actress, which is good. And she did a good job, and I see why she won. But you're right about, like, things happen, but it's a lot of what exactly the Academy is looking for.
Right.
They want long shots. They want a color palette. They want, like, weird off-the-wall stories. They want weird nudity for no reason. Like, they just like it very artistic.
Yes, I will agree 100% right there, artistic, because that's what it felt like. It was almost filmed more like a documentary, but you could see the artistic way about it, and it seemed very low budget. You know, yeah. Obviously they didn't put a whole lot of money in this.
I actually have seen another Chloe Zhao movie, which I watched for a class this semester. It's called Songs My Brothers Taught Me. It was good. It wasn't totally up my alley. It's very indie, but this is very much her style. This is what she, like, does. So it wasn't bad. It's not bad. It's not a bad movie. It's just something that I would watch for a class and then be like, okay, that was fine. It's not the worst thing I've ever seen, but would I watch it again? Probably not, but I don't know. I think that everybody was on such a high after Parasite won last year, which I still haven't seen, but everybody absolutely raves about.
Going back to your original thing about watching a movie and not knowing who the actors and actresses are, I couldn't help but watch this movie and Frances McDormand. All I could think about was Fargo.
Yeah, I was gonna say.
And I kept looking for her to have her accent.
Yeah.
That, you know, she had in the movie. But I think that's the only other thing I've ever really seen her in. That's the most well-known thing that I know her from.
Well, it's funny that you bring up Fargo, because in that reading that I did about the semi-professional actors and the way that they do rural crime dramas, they talk specifically about Fargo in that.
But it's still really good and it has a good story. You have to be into that kind of movie to enjoy it, unfortunately. I am one that does enjoy it and I've seen it numerous times.
You know there's a show, right?
I have heard that there was a show. I've never watched it.
I don't know if it's still on, but there was a show based on Fargo. It had the guy who plays Bilbo Baggins in the Hobbit movies.
Okay.
He was in it.
Okay.
Yeah.
So basically, Frances McDormand plays Fern, and she basically loses everything when the town of Empire goes basically bankrupt. And the whole town shuts down and it becomes a wasteland, basically. They don't really explain right away what happens to her husband, but yeah. Her husband had died at some point. She now lives in her van and she named her van Vanguard, which I thought was kind of funny. So she's working at Amazon and it's doesn't seem like she does anything very specific. It seems like she kind of does things here and there, depending mm-hmm. on what it is. Turns out it's only a seasonal job because time ends. So obviously it's around Christmas and they get real busy. You know how packages and everything mm-hmm. get busy. So she works there. She basically has to travel from place to place to make ends meet just so she can survive. She ends up joining a nomad support group, I would call it. She meets a lot of people. She travels a lot. Things kind of keep happening for the worst for her. She tries to make ends meet. She meets Dave at some point. And then basically all around the whole movie, it comes full circle and she starts all over in a way. Kind of the way I understood it. It's a kind of a movie where it's just a revolving door. You watch it and you understand how her life goes for a full year. And then basically she's going to start over again. So there's really no ending to this movie. It doesn't really have a climactic area or anything like that. It's just a story about her life and the life of these actual nomads.
They do something really interesting as they turn this whole story into loss. Basically, this is the story of loss, and you see it in so many different ways, starting from, you know, the very first moments. She starts off, she's lost her husband, and you see she kind of doesn't really stay in one place very long, probably like a few months at a time, a few weeks at a time. But something interesting that I really like about this movie is the way that they drive home that she's not homeless.
Right. She actually says that at one point, because somebody said, oh, I heard you're homeless. She goes, no, I just houseless is what she said.
Right. I really liked the way that they introduced, I guess, neighbors from her town or some people. I think she used to tutor the daughter.
Yeah.
And after her husband died, she just kind of left and she runs into them in some sort of sporting store or something. You know, that's when the daughter says, oh, I heard you're homeless. And the mom's she's like, you know, you can come and stay with us. You can come and stay with us. It's fine. Like, we'd love to have you. And she's like, no, I'm fine. I don't. Sometimes people think that things are good for them, like out of the goodness of their heart. But like, it's really not. And, you know, that's not what Fern wants. And I think that's a really good thing that they drive through the whole movie.
I don't think it's just specifically Fern. I think it's these types of people. They're not looking for a handout. They're not looking for you to help them. They're so wrapped up in what they're doing. They're focused on what they're doing. And it's almost like they have a lot of pride in the way that they're living and the way that they build up these vans and they make everything livable and compact. That's just the way they are.
Right. And I think that it's really cool that they take this story and they don't really turn it into a way of, you know, people need help. This movie also has a really big fuck capitalism vibe. And I don't know if you got it also, but there's this reoccurring theme amongst the nomads where they talk about, I don't want to work until I die. Because, you know, that's the way that it goes, unfortunately, for most people. By the time they're settled into a career, you can't retire until you get your 25 years. And who knows when that'll be? You'll be 70.
She even says something at one point. I believe she's talking to her sister, and she says how irresponsible it is for people to buy a house and get into that much debt. You know what I mean? It's kind of an obscure way to look at it, but that is kind of the way it works. But I can understand just the story side of this and how people think that's the way it is. You buy a house, you get into debt. That's the way America is.
I think it's really interesting how they portray how much she, not necessarily struggles. She doesn't struggle for money because she lives within her means, obviously. You know, she does all of these little jobs here and there. But you don't really see it until the van dies, that how little money she actually has, you know, and then she has to go and, you know, borrow the $2,300 from her sister. And she says, you know, I'm going to get this back to you. I'm going to go back to Amazon soon. And once I go back to Amazon, you know, it's going to be fine. I'm going to get you this money back. And the sister's like, I know you'll get it back to me. I know you'll get it back to me. But does she really? Or is she just saying that? So I thought that was interesting, because even the sister does it there. You know, you can stay with us. Why don't you come and live with us? You know, we can make this your bedroom.
Right. And she was even saying, you know, I can't stay in this bedroom. You know, I can't stay in this bed. And it's not like I was originally thinking it was because of bad memories or something like that. But it's their way of living. They can't live under a roof. Right. And even later in the movie, when she goes and stays with Dave, she's staying in the house, and then she sneaks out to go sleep in her van. When she shows up and talks to Dave, his van is out in the yard. It's got a flat tire. And she says, you know, you're letting your van go to waste out there. It's got a flat tire. And he's like, oh, does it? So he's kind of transitioning back to, I venture to say, normal living, but more common living and away from the whole nomad thing. And she's not real happy about that, because she's basically in this for the long haul. This is her way of life. This is what she wants.
Right. And you can kind of tell that in the conversation she has with her sister later in the movie. You know, when her sister's like, you just left. Like, you just left me. And like, I don't even get to see you anymore. You know, let's just ride out the rest of our lives together and, you know, hang out and be family, basically. But it seems that Fern has always kind of had this free spirit, and, you know, she kind of let her husband tie her down, and then her husband died, and she was like, you know what, I'm not gonna do it anymore. I'm gonna go and I'm gonna live life, and I'm gonna travel, and I'm gonna work, and I'm gonna do what I need to do to survive, but I'm gonna, you know, have fun, basically.
Right. You can see in certain parts that she doesn't let things get her down. Like, at one point, it's closer to the beginning of the movie, it's New Year's Eve, and she's celebrating New Year's Eve by herself in her van, and she's got the New Year's Eve tiara on. She's basically celebrating on her own. Now, I did notice a weird tie-in to Christmas, and I don't know if there was anything specific there. Like, her lamp in her van was a Santa Claus lamp. She refers to Bob Wells. She says he looks like Santa Claus. He's got the big beard. Like, her plates and stuff, they look like holiday oriented. So I didn't know if she was remembering a happier time kind of thing.
It's possible. I don't know if that's what was intended. I didn't pick up on that. But, you know, it could just be that her storage locker is in that place she goes in the winter. And then in the winter, she's like, oh, well, it's almost Christmas. Let me grab my Christmas stuff. You know what I mean?
Right.
And then she just kind of doesn't really go back. So she ends up keeping it.
So after her job ends, basically, at Amazon for the season, she has to move on. I know at one point she's staying in like a parking lot, and somebody's knocking on the van. She comes out and she says, oh, you know, they said it was overnight parking was fine. The lady's like, oh, no, that's fine, but it's going to get really cold. You know, there's a shelter. Oh, no, I'll be fine. She goes, it's going to get really cold. I'll be fine. So once again, she's very proud. She has to keep moving because she's not going to survive living in those conditions. One of the things that you'll notice that they do move around, and I wonder if it's because they're following the nicer weather. Because I want to say they're like Indiana or Montana or something along those lines, or somewhere up where it gets super cold.
Right. Yeah. I don't know where it starts off the top of my head. I do know that after Amazon, she goes to Arizona.
Right. And I want to say that the town of Empire was in Nevada.
Probably.
So she is basically, you know, the Midwest area she travels around. I do want to say, I think the sister must live in California, because towards the end of the movie, when she goes to visit her, she's actually what looks like the Redwood Forest. If you've seen that scene, if you remember how big the trees were and how tall the trees were, that's what they're really like. I've been there. They're amazing. If you ever get a chance to go to the Redwood Forest, definitely do it, because it's awesome. So after she leaves the Amazon job, she ends up running into this nomad support group where she meets Bob Wells. I'm pretty sure that's where she meets Swanky and Dave. And that lady, Linda May, I'm wondering if she's just kind of around all the time because she seemed to kind of pop up and be around in the knot.
I think that Linda May is a nomad. I think that she is because she is the one who tells her to go to Courtside, which is where Bob Wells is.
Okay.
Yeah. And then they have the, I don't know if it's quite a campground, but it seems like a campground job together later.
Yes, that's right.
Maybe around the springtime, I guess, right. You could say.
They do like maintenance and all that kind of stuff. When they get to the support group, it's not really funny, but it's interesting, I'd say. Mm-hmm. Like when they start talking about how to use the bathroom and stuff, and they're like, you know, there's this size gallon bucket, but you know, I live in this small car, so I use the 7 gallon bucket or whatever, you know. They were talking about that. And it's almost in a funny way between them because it's like real. And they talk about how to make things smaller and more compact. You know, they give each other a lot of tips, you know, keeping warm. Maintenance on the truck, the lady shows her how to paint her van because she says, oh, your van's going to fall apart. She teaches her how to get rid of the rust and all that kind of stuff. I thought it was kind of funny. The one lady, I don't even remember who it was, but she had put up a pirate flag.
Oh, that's Swanky.
And I was confused. I'm like, what's with the pirate flag? So she went over there. She needed help because her tire went flat. She goes and knocks on it. She goes, I'm busy. The pirate flag's up. You know, it's basically a stay away kind of thing. She said, I need to ride to town, you know, and she's kind of giving her a hard time. You know, how do you not have a spare? How do you not have the way of fixing a flat tire? And she's basically cowering down saying, I know, I just need help. But once again, they don't like to ask for help, even from each other. They don't want help.
Right.
And at one point, they even talk about how they're like sick. And I thought it was going in a direction of like, oh, something serious is happening. But I think that's almost like a normal thing.
Right.
Like they don't have a whole lot of hygiene. They can very easily get sick. So that was kind of a side they were showing.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? I thought it was going to be something worse, you know, like, yeah. Oh, somebody's dying all of a sudden, but it really wasn't. I think it was just a way of saying this is a reality of what actually happens. Swanky does talk about having cancer. She has all this extra stuff and she's giving it away. And she's saying, oh, that scarf, my grandmother made it for me, you know, I don't need it anymore, but you go ahead and you enjoy that. So once again, they're looking to pay it forward all the time, but they don't want anything in return. You know,
right.
I have this stuff. I want somebody else to have it and utilize it. Boom, I'm giving it away. And that's when Fern sits in the chair and she goes, oh, and it's not a nice chair. It's
right.
An old school lawn chair. She's, oh, this chair is really nice. Well, you go ahead and take that with you. No, I couldn't do that. No, you take that chair. It's really comfortable. So it's like the little things
right.
that make them super happy.
Yeah, it's like the luxuries that you don't even realize that you don't have when, you know what I mean? Like, you know, having a comfortable chair to sit in or, you know, having somewhere to like stretch your legs. Like you don't even think about it. I mean, of course you think about it on a 2-hour car ride or you think about it when you drive cross country. But there's a difference between, you know, taking 3 days to drive who knows where and then living in your car all the time.
Right. You learn what's comfortable and what's worth keeping and what's not.
Exactly.
And that's how they are. They live within their means. It gets a little disturbing at this point because Swanky, since she has cancer, she starts talking about how she doesn't want to be back in the hospital. She's going to refuse. And she's talking about how she's reading a book by Dr. Death, which is Dr. Kevorkian. You know, and it tells ways that she can end her life if she's ready. And it's like, wow, that's really sad. But that's kind of a reality for them. She does die at some point in the movie. Obviously, she doesn't die in real life because she was an actress and she's an actual person.
Right.
She apparently really likes rocks.
Right.
So she's like a geologist kind of thing. And she was saying at one point, talking to Fern, that instead of being sad for me, I want everybody to throw a rock into a fire and remember me.
Mm-hmm.
So at the end of the movie, they're all sitting around the campfire and they're throwing rocks in and, you know, it's really sad.
Yeah, that part got me.
And I think that kind of upset Fern at the time because husband did die from cancer. I don't remember what kind of cancer he had, but he died from cancer, some kind of cancer. And she basically had to watch him with her way. And then she, you know, she's talking to Swanky about her situation. And I almost got the vibe that she really didn't want to have to do that, but she was there for a friend kind of thing.
The whole thing is about loss, which I said earlier. But there's, you know, the reoccurring theme of Fern talking about her husband and, you know, that's kind of what has her out there in the first place. I don't know if it's a way of mourning for her or if it's a way to get her mind off of it. You know, she doesn't have to think too much about it kind of thing. But I think it's interesting how they play with that with Fern and Dave's relationship throughout the movie, because you can kind of tell from the first time that Dave meets Fern, he kind of likes her, you know what I mean? And you see that she's constantly just shooting him down. I really thought, you know, after Fern met his son and he was like, you know, I'm gonna be grandfather, I thought that she would go back with him. And then even when she went to visit him, I thought maybe she'd stay, but you know, that's a whole movie. That's not what she is. You know, she's not gonna stop.
I think that's the point of all of them. They're be a nomad. I guess you're kind of on your own. You know, you live off the land as much as you can. You travel and you're by yourself. I don't remember ever seeing people travel as a couple or anything like that. So I don't know if that's even a thing. So yeah, so she met Dave at the first support group. And then when she moves and she ends up working at that RV park, she runs into Dave again and she's got ants and she's trying to clean out her van. And he reaches in to try and help her, grabs a box and the bottom falls out and all her dishes break. And it was at that moment, it was like that oof moment. Like you felt that because they built that up to you. That when that happened, it almost felt like your soul broke. Right. It was like, oh, I know how important all that stuff is to you. Right. You know, it's not just like, broke some dishes, I'll buy some new ones. Those are her dishes. And then later, instead of, obviously she can't buy any new ones, she's gluing them back together and she's going to make do with what she's got. But she got really upset with him, like, just put it down and walk away. Leave me alone. You're not helping.
Right.
You know, and obviously he feels bad.
Right. And they add a little bit more to the dishes because obviously that's difficult because you understand that's all they have. But they add that little added like sentimental bit to it just so you know how much it hurt. Because she tells the story about how her dad gave them to her as a graduation present. And, you know, it was this beautiful set of dishes and they were like really nice. And he had gone around to like yard sales to collect the entire set. So it took him like forever. And, you know, he did it as this, like, big gesture gift to her, you know, after this monumental step in her life. And then to know that, and then also know that those are the only dishes she has, and that's probably the only reason that she still has them and hasn't switched over to something else. And then to see it fall and just shatter, like, ugh. But then that plays into that loss and, like, object permanence and all that stuff that they do within this movie.
It's because they, like you said, they build it up and they tell the story so you can feel it. And obviously that's probably why it won, you know, Best Picture, or whatever, for little things like that, you know, to explain it and to make you feel whatever the characters are feeling.
Yeah, exactly.
So moving forward, her and Dave end up working together at some kind of, it was almost like a truck stop restaurant type of thing. And that's when Fern meets Dave's son.
Right.
And he comes in like, oh, I'm looking for my dad. And she's just like, oh, you know, like, I didn't even know you had kids kind of thing. And obviously this kid is like a recovering alcoholic or
right.
substance abuse of some type. I want to say alcohol because yeah. I think he says AA. So she meets his son and she's kind of nosy. You know, he's talking to him while he's cooking. And then she ends up talking to him later and saying how he's having a kid and he's trying to get his dad to come back home with him. So she I think convinces Dave.
Yeah, she does.
To, you know, you should go visit when the baby's born, you know, as a grandfather or whatever. So when Dave decides that he's going to go, he actually invites Fern. You should come with me. And she's like, no, I can't do that. You know, I'm not doing that. You know, that's your thing. It's your family. You go and stay with them. And then, you know, Dave eventually does leave. And that's at the point where her van breaks down.
Right.
She gets gas and she's sitting at the gas station. She tries to start the van. It won't start. And once again, you feel that, oh, that's bad. So she gets it to a garage and it's kind of like the guys working there don't understand. They're not trying to screw her over. It's more like they're trying to give her good advice. Basically, this is what's wrong with it. You need this, 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 and this to fix it. What we suggest is try and get everything you can out of it, sell it, you know, and get something else. And she's like, I can't do that. You know, that's not even an option. I cannot be without this van. It has to be this van. So that's when she contacts her sister about getting the money and she goes and stays with her.
Right.
But yeah, she can't be without the van. It's not even an option.
Well, and then they do something interesting and they play it so that, I guess it's they're at a barbecue or they have a barbecue because she's coming to town, something like that. And all of, I guess the sister's husband and all of their friends are like realtors. So they're trying to talk about like buying houses and like, and then that kind of drives home that, you know what, no, you have to be respectful of me. This is what I want to do with my life. And I don't think that it's fair for you to try and push this down my throat because this isn't what I want to do. I told you this isn't what I want to do. So I need you to back off. And, you know, she kind of turns it into you're preying on people who, you know, don't know any better, which I mean, is true. That's how a lot of debt works, unfortunately. But yeah, it almost has this sense of like dramatic irony for her. And, you know, being a nomad and being houseless, and then all of these people who want desperately to sell her a house that she can't afford.
She seems like a very smart person, and if she wanted to re-enter society, mm-hmm. she could do it. But it's just not something that she wants to do. She's made the decision she's doing this, and I think that's why they were trying to nudge her. It's like, you know, you can get a job. You can afford this. We can help you. But she's just not interested. And her sister obviously has lots of money.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They have a big house, big family. They're throwing this big barbecue, you know. It's obviously kind of in her honor, I guess. You know, mm-hmm. she's coming to town to have this big barbecue. But it's more like a slap in the face if you really think about it, you know.
Yeah, because that's not what she wants.
No. And I'm wondering if it was more like a, hey, this is what life can really be like. You know, don't you want to have all this? And she's just not interested.
She just doesn't want it.
She would rather live in a van and talk to people that are in the same position as her and just basically exist.
Yeah.
I mean, that sounds bad, but that's what she just wants. She just wants to just be.
Yeah, exactly.
So her sister invites her to stay with her. And that's when she's like, you know, I can't do that. I can't stay in this house. I can't stay in this bed. It's just not going to happen. I think her sister knew that. And it was more like, I'm going to offer anyway. So she gives her the money. She gets her van fixed. So earlier in the movie, she ran into this guy who was a nomad and wanted to borrow or needed a light.
He needed a cigarette.
Oh, that's right. He needed a cigarette. And then she gave him a cigarette. And then she's like, do you need a light? And he goes, oh, that'd be great. She lights a cigarette for him. And she goes, do you need a lighter? And he was like, you know, that'd be great. So he takes a lighter. Later in the movie, she runs back into him. And he's just kind of sitting there, like, with all his stuff on the ground. She walks over and she says, you want a sandwich? And he's like, well, do you want a beer? So it's like, if you give me a beer, I'll give you a sandwich. Right. That's their little barter system. It's like, you give me something, I'll give you. It's not going to be a, hey, I have an extra. No, we don't do that. Right. It's you give me something, I give you something. So she sits down, has a beer, and gives him the sandwich. And she says, I know you. I gave you a lighter. And she says, do you still have that? And he was like, no, you know, that's come and gone. And I think he had a different lighter, and there was like a stone or something in it.
It was a dinosaur.
Okay, that did that not have anything to do with Swanky, or it was just more of a...
I think it was just because she met him at that. Like, she was, like, selling stone in, like, Arizona.
That's right, and somebody came up, and they were...
trying to sell, like, jewelry or something.
Yeah, and she's trying to say, hey, these guys got some really good stuff. You should buy it from them, mm-hmm. you know? Because obviously they were also some kind of nomads or whatever.
Right.
So she's trying to help them mm-hmm. by telling the boss or whatever, hey, you should buy some of the stuff from them. Because they look out for each other. So she meets up with the guy. They're talking about like relationship stuff. She goes, mm-hmm. Do you have anybody? And he says, well, there is this one person. And she goes into talking about her vows that she had with mm-hmm. with her husband. She says the whole thing.
Got a girlfriend anywhere?
Well, to be truthful, there's one.
Mm-hmm.
I write letters to her.
Oh, smart man.
I just can't ever write about anything I reckon she'd care about.
You ever try poems?
Can't say I have. Do you know any?
How about one that I used for my wedding vow when I was not much older than you?
Oh, right on. Mind if I hear it?
Okay, let's see if I can remember it. Shall I compare thee to a summer's day? Thou art more lovely, more temperate. Rough winds do shake the darling buds of May, and summer's lease hath all too short a date. Sometime too hot the eye of heaven shines, and often is his gold complexion dimmed, and every fair from fair sometimes declines by chance, or nature's changing course undimmed. But thy eternal summer shall not fade, nor lose possession of that fair thou owest. Nor shall death brag thou walkest in his shade, when in eternal lines to time thou growest. So long as men can breathe and eyes can see, so long lives this, and this gives life to thee.
It's like a really good moment in the movie.
This moment is when I was like, that's why this won Best Picture. There were other moments where I was like, okay, like the shots are really long and they're using a lot of long shots and they have a color palette, but I was like, the poem shit, the Academy eats that shit up.
Right.
They eat that shit up. if you throw any sort of like English teacher shit in there, they're gonna lose their mind. Because that's the thing about the Academy is there's a this is gonna be controversial. There's a difference between like filmmakers and people who study film, because people who study film, they're comparable to like people who study English. If that makes sense. The Academy is like the English teacher of filmmakers, where they kind of find things in places that they aren't really, and they like it when, you know, you use a certain visual or that kind of stuff. So that's why they liked this movie so much, and that's why it won Best Picture. You can see it in like every movie that wins Best Picture. There's something like that.
Well, and I even asked you the other day, you being a filmmaker, would you rather win an Academy Award for something like this, where they ate it up because of the shots and the artistic look at it? Or do you want to be that movie that the fans are like, oh my god, you have to go see this movie, it was so good, action-packed, the twist at the end, mm-hmm. you know, all those things? Because honestly, I'm not saying that this movie was good or bad, but you can see once again why they liked it so mm-hmm. much. But I would definitely take a movie like The Goonies mm-hmm. over something like this. Just, it's those kind of things that it's going to stick with me more. You know, the fun, the good line, that kind of stuff sticks with me. This one's not really going to stick with me.
Right. The ideal position to be in is to be the Joker, because the Joker had so much controversy around it for so many different reasons, because people either loved it or hated it. It was a superhero based off of a superhero, but not actually a superhero, not even really relatively related to Batman, just kind of the concept of how somebody could become the Joker, and then was nominated for Best Picture, and Joaquin Phoenix took home the Oscar for Best Actor. So that is the ideal. That's what you want to be. It's, I want to make this movie, and I want everybody to love it, and I want to love it. And then if the Academy also loves it, that's fucking awesome. That's like a bonus. You know what I mean?
Right.
It's fun to make like artistic shit like this, but it's like boring to watch. And I had a really hard time with this movie for like the first hour. Like, I'm sure that's how you felt about Lady Bird, but I like had a hard time with this one.
I would say Lady Bird was a little bit better than this one for me. Once again, not saying this was a bad movie.
It's just hard to watch.
It just, I don't, like, it's that stick factor. It's not going to stick with me, because what sticks with me is Easter eggs, twist endings, good lines, a little bit of comedy, action, fantasy, all that kind of stuff thrown in makes a good movie for me.
Right.
As being just a film fan.
That one of the things that this movie doesn't have is it doesn't have stakes. What are the stakes? What is she at risk of losing other than the van? And even the van, like, she has a quick fix for. I don't feel like obviously life is a struggle, but there's no like monumental problem. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, what's the problem? What is the ultimate conflict in this movie? There isn't really one.
Nope.
And there isn't one that she doesn't fix like quickly. So, I mean, yes, it's vignettes of somebody's life. That's the same thing that Lady Bird was. But at least Lady Bird had that conflict, you know, between the mother and the daughter. But this
doesn't. And it kind of had that climactic part.
Yeah.
And that warm fuzzy when she went off to college and everything.
Right.
And you could see that she grew up and, you know, it advanced throughout the story.
Right.
This one, it just kind of comes back around and
right. Time is starting over again. Yeah.
So back to that, she meets this guy once again. I almost want to say that it was like an enlightening moment for her, that she kind of realized in a way that things were more important, but I don't really know, because she ends up going and visiting Dave. So at that point, what you're thinking is, you know, she's going to go and stay with Dave. They're going to hit it off. They're going to start a life together.
Right.
But it doesn't really go that way. You know, we talked about it earlier where she's staying in a house, but she can't stand it. So she sneaks out to the van.
Right.
And she ends up not even really staying very long.
Yeah, she doesn't. You think that she's going to stay a lot longer. And I mean, even there's this moment where he has to go and get something, and it's just the two of them and the baby, and he hands her the baby and she like doesn't know what to do with it. And I thought maybe, okay, well, this is a movie and women are charmed by babies in movies, but she still just kind of doesn't like know what to do with it. So I thought maybe that would kind of get her into settling, like, oh, maybe, you know what, maybe this is what I want. Maybe I do want to be a grandparent. Maybe I do want to start a life with Dave. Maybe I do want to live here with them. And, you know, he even offers, he's like, I asked if you could stay in the guest house.
Right.
And like, they're willing, but you know, it's just, this isn't the life that she wants. She doesn't want a family. She doesn't want, you know, to be surrounded by people. She wants to live in her van. She She wants to drive across country. She wants to work and then move and work and move and work and, you know, see the few people that she has befriended along the way in the places that she sees them. And that's it.
Right.
That's life.
So after she leaves him, she basically goes back to Amazon because now we've gone a full circle of the year. So she's working at Amazon again. And then she celebrates New Year's again by herself. And at this point, she goes and visits Empire.
Right.
She goes to the town that's completely closed. It's a dead town. It's a ghost town. There's nobody there. She goes back to her house, right? Mm-hmm. That is her house.
I believe so.
Because she starts looking around the house and she's looking at the bedrooms. And then she walks out the back door. And you're thinking that almost got that vibe like she was going to kill herself kind of thing. But there's a lot of music playing and like she's talking like a narrator kind of talking. She's not physically talking. And she basically goes outside, out the back door, and the movie pretty much just kind of ends.
Mm-hmm.
So it really doesn't have an ending. It just keeps going.
Right.
You know? And that's when they have their group again. That's right. I think that's the end. But they meet up with the group.
I think.
And they have the ending.
They meet up with the group, and then that forces her to go back home. Because she has that really good conversation with Bob Wells about
his son. Right.
It's like my dad used to say, what's remembered lives. I maybe spent too much of my life just remembering Bob. You know what I mean?
I can relate. I rarely ever talk about my son, but today would be his 33rd birthday, and 5 years ago he took his life. And I can still barely say that in a sentence. And for a long time, every day was, the question was, how can I be alive on this earth when he's not?
So this is the moment that kind of pushes her toward, I need to stop holding on. If I want to do this and I want to do this life right, then I can't dwell in the past. I can't wait for my husband to come back. He's never come back.
That's what prompts her to go back and sell all of her stuff.
That's right. She goes back and closed down her storage unit.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that's what prompts her to go back and to, you know, sell all of her stuff. Because now she's like, what does she even need in there? You know, if she leaves it there for a year, she doesn't need it. And that's what it is. It's her holding on to these memories and you know, holding on to her loss, basically. She even says it, you know, I spent too much time holding on to my memory. But that just brings that whole circle of loss, you know, back. And, you know, in order for her to move on, she has to let go. And that's like the whole moral of the movie, I guess.
Right. And it, like I said, it once again becomes full circle.
Exactly.
And I'm wondering if when she meets that group, is that the first time she meets them in the beginning of the movie? Or was this, you know, did she previously do this?
Yeah, that's the first time because Linda May tells her about it.
Okay. So we assume now that every year she's going to do this support group. She's going to continue to travel around and she's going to go back and work for Amazon around the holidays.
Right. Which seems to be her track, basically.
Right. So it's just an okay for me.
Right.
As far as the movie goes, it's just an okay.
I did like one thing at the end, and they do a dedication at the end of this movie, and it's dedicated to those who depart, which is like sad.
Like, wow. That's the whole thing is, you know, nobody ever. And I think that that's what they try to show
with, you know, her constantly coming back to the same places. Nobody's ever gone.
Right.
So I think that it was a good way to put it. And that's my last note on it. But it was a tearjerker toward the end. I mean, with the swanky, and then.
I mean, it got me a little bit, but it wasn't like devastating. You know
right.
what I mean?
It wasn't a My Girl.
No.
Yeah. I mean, it was just like, oof.
I mean, that pretty much wraps that up for us.
That's pretty much that.
So why don't we give a little insight of what's going to happen the next couple weeks?
So firstly, I'd like to apologize that this is a week late. We just couldn't, we tried to record and we couldn't hear each other. The internet was just not working. So now we're doing this together on Mother's Day weekend. It's Mother's Day weekend. So I have to break some bad news to you. Well, good and bad news. I'd say it's good and bad news. I have to finish my semester so that I can graduate college without failing. And as much as I love the podcast, sometimes it eats up the days that I could be doing homework. So we're going to take a week off just so that I can finish the semester. And we are going to come back on Memorial Day weekend, the Friday before Memorial Day weekend. That is the 28th of May. And we're going to come back with Top Gun. So that's exciting. And that's what that's the plan for now.
Hopefully nothing gets in our way of this one, because yeah. I think that's a great movie to do at a great time. Right. You know, Memorial Day weekend. Let's do a very patriotic military type movie. That's a good one.
Yeah. So, I mean, that works. I have to write a paper on it, so I have to watch it anyway.
I will have to say that anybody listening, Brooke has not seen this movie 100% all the way through, so she doesn't even understand what the movie is. All that she could relate to me was the volleyball scene, and I was like, that is nothing to do with the movie, so it should be pretty good to have her watch it. I want to know what her take is on this. Top Gun 1986. Brooke has not seen the whole thing. I was 6 years old when this came out. I don't remember seeing it right away, but it was always one of those movies that you had to watch and you had to have the volume turned up really loud, because like the beginning sequence is just phenomenal with the music and the planes. And it's just awesome. It's just a good movie. I think you're going to enjoy it, seeing it from start to finish. I don't know if you're going to get anything out of it as far as filmy stuff, but it's got a beginning, middle, end, you know, climax, changes the course of action kind of movie. So it's good. Yeah. Definitely a good 80s flick.
So we're excited. Very excited.
So, yes, once again, there will not be a Film Frenzy episode for the 21st. We'll be back on the 28th.
Yes. Another little mini hiatus. Please bear with us.
But in the meantime, go ahead and catch up on all the previous episodes. We're always here to listen. Tell us what you like, what you don't like.
If you are not currently following us, you can follow us at facebook.com/filmfrenzypodcast, all one word. Instagram is @filmfrenzypodcast, also all one word. And TikTok @filmfrenzypodcast, also all one word. That is in the description of the podcast. Follow us. Keep you posted almost every day of the week, as long as I remember to schedule posts. But yeah, those are the places that you're going to hear from us, you know, if we have any technical difficulties, unfortunately. If you're following us on one, make sure you follow us on all three. You're going to see different things, different places. Keep listening, keep following, and we'll be back on the 28th. All right, and we will see you in 2 weeks.
Bye.
Bye.